It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Kate Archer-Kent.
And I'm Rob Ferret. A handful of companies are known as the Big Five Publishers.
Macmillan, HarperCollins, Penguin Random House, Hachette, and Simon & Schuster. Together, they make up the vast majority of best-selling books in the U.S.
But according to Publishers Weekly, there is a serious industry competitor.
Increasingly, authors are seeking out small independent publishers to take their work from manuscript to the shelf.
In Wisconsin, each year, dozens of books come from independent publishers that work to lift up Midwestern voices.
We dive into their work and the industry with Kristen Mitchell, the owner and founder of Little Creek Press in Mineral Point. Kristen, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
And Ross Tangadal is an associate professor of English and director of the Cornerstone Press at UW-Stevens Point. Ross, welcome.
Glad to be here. Thanks.
Ross, how are independent publishers different from the large commercial publishers or the Big Five?
Well, I can speak obviously from my own experience, but I feel like a lot of small presses operate under a similar set of guidelines or expectations. For instance, a lot of our titles are not agent represented or agent submitted. So a lot of our acquisitions are coming directly from, would-be authors. And so right away, there's this connection between the publisher, the acquiring team, and the author, him or herself, as opposed to sometimes with agents, it's like there's a middle person and it's hard to find that initial relationship with the writer. So I think right away, that's a major difference for our team anyway, is that direct communication and relationship with authors.
Kristen, you found that the term independent publisher is difficult to define. Why is that?
I think because the transition or the growth of the publishing world has changed so dramatically in the last 10 years. For the longest time, it really was mainly the big publishers that has now been whittled down to five. And I think people were finding less opportunity with the big five or the big six or whatever it was at any given time. So I think then people started to look for other resources. Well, why can't we just do this ourselves? Why? So then that self-publishing model started to grow. And then trying to find a balance between the two of them, I think that's where the divergence, that's kind of where the independent publishing generally the model started and came from, is like, well, we can do all the services of a traditional publisher, but we're not going to buy the manuscript and we're not going to pay out advances, but we're going to, similar to what Ross said, work so closely with the author. So I think it's, but independent publishers is a little bit of a broad term, I feel, because everybody's doing it maybe just a little bit different. The university presses are going to act a little bit different than my press, and my press is going to act a little bit differently than somebody who might be a very niche publisher. So I think that's why I think it's a little bit of a hard term to define.
Ross, Cornerstone being among just a handful of student-staffed presses in the country, how are students involved in the publishing process at Cornerstone?
They're involved in every department. So a traditional publishing house has editorial, production, marketing, sales, you name it. And students, as staff members of the press, while taking publishing classes, get to take a role that they want. So if they want to design book covers, they get to work for the production team. If they want to learn how to be editors, in order to become an editor, you actually have to edit things. And so they get a chance to edit manuscripts with our editorial team. If we have students that are really savvy with social media and are more marketing centric in their studies, hey, we've got a media team that needs to have materials made and connections made with authors. So honestly, when we say student staff press, we mean it. It's students involved in every facet of the publishing process.
And Cornerstone recently marking 40 years. How has interest in publishing changed over time? What have you seen?
There are so many writers in the United States, especially. And there's not always the opportunity for those writers to become published authors. And so certainly from what I've seen in my short 8 years here is that our number of submissions has just skyrocketed. There are so many people that have stories to tell, that have narratives that they've been working on, that maybe they've been publishing stories and poems in magazines and they want to try to make a book out of things. It's been so great to see the quality of submissions continue to improve year in and year out, because there are so many great writers out there that just haven't been given that opportunity yet.
That's exciting and hard all at once. Kristen, I would imagine you get lots of manuscript submissions each year. What goes into accepting one or denying one?
We do get a lot of submissions a year, and we earlier in the year, in this year, we switched our model a little bit, and we really are focusing just on Wisconsin authors and Wisconsin books. Mm-hmm. I honestly thought that maybe our submissions would dwindle a little bit because I was really kind of pulling in the focus, but it had the opposite effect, and we're getting, and to Ross's point, there are so many fantastic writers out there. When we get a submission, there's a team of us similar to Ross's team, and we all take a look at it. So the editor's going to look at it and do an editorial assessment. Is this book, does it align with what kind of books we want to publish? Is it a well-written book? And then really at its core, how much or how little work needs to be done to make it a really great published book? PR and marketing steps in. Okay, is there a niche for this book? Is there going to be a built-in market? And if there's not, you know, and we still want to take it on, well, how do we pivot and make that work for the author? And then I kind of feel like my role is basically project management person, managing expectations person, is really just to kind of vet the author. I really want to get to know them. I want to know what their aspirations and their goals are. So I really, because we build relationships with these people, and we have to, the idea is that we have this great working relationship. So ultimately the author gets exactly what they need. And to get to that end goal, we have to make sure that we all, my whole team feels that this is the book that, you know, we really want to champion and put out into the world, and the author we want to work with.
If the author is flexible about their craft versus pretty rigid about what they've submitted, how do you interpret that?
Well, that's a good question, because it does happen where, you know, we can see opportunity for growth within a manuscript. And if we, and I'm always willing and happy to make the suggestions, I always ask first if they would like the feedback. And if they do want the feedback, if they're too rigid and really feel that their book is the best that it can be as it stands, then it's most likely not an author we're going to work with.
Ross, the publishing and editing process, as you know, can be tough. It can be subjective. There is feedback, as Kristen mentioned. How do you work with students on this aspect of publishing?
Absolutely. So again, what's really a unique part of our operations that we have undergraduate students working within the departments of the press. And so the way that my courses are set up is we have several days where we're only focusing on press-related materials. So the feedback that students receive, say, through the editorial department is really being given to them by our editorial director, who we recently hired. He was an undergrad for me for 2 years. And then now we created a position so that we could hire out an editorial director to assist with our really, really impressive growing list. And so now he, Brett Hill, will be in charge of training and orienting our new editorial assistants. And so the feedback really comes from trust. I, since the day I got here, trust that my students are adults and I will treat them that way. And therefore, much is expected of them. And every single time that I've done that, the students rise to the occasion. You have to give them the opportunity to both fail and succeed, but every single time they succeed, in my estimation. So that's really how we build not only relationships with authors, but how I then build relationships with these students who are learning the trade.
We're talking about independent and small publishers in Wisconsin with two industry leaders. That is Ross Tangadal, who is an associate professor of English and director of the Cornerstone Press at UW-Stevens Point. We have Kristen Mitchell with us, the owner and founder of Little Creek Press in Mineral Point. Kristen, some indie publishers in the state specialize in niche genres, topics like nautical books or medical physics, or there's Shields Publications in Eagle River specializing in earthworm publishing. How do these niche publishers fit into the publishing world?
So I think sometimes they're born out of necessity or serving that need. Many, and I'm being very broad in this, but I think that a lot of times, oftentimes, those publishing companies are started very specifically to fill that niche, that need. Oftentimes it's an author run publishing company. I I know of several publishing companies that were started because the author couldn't find a publisher that they could align with and decided to start their own imprint so that they could publish their own books. And then I think they build on that, right? They've built a niche, and then other people that may fall into that specific category can come to them and then also be published. So, I mean, we're all valuable. There's value in all of our models.
Ross, at Cornerstone Press, working to elevate that Midwestern voice, the Wisconsin authors, how might stories from Midwesterners differ from stories that you would get from the coast?
Sure. So, we hate to be stereotypical of either the coasts or the Midwest, but we consider the Midwest, flyover country, the heartland, all of these kind of stereotypes of what the Midwest is. It's a simple place. It's not a place of vibrancy or culture. And of course, we all know that to be false, right? Especially those of us that live in the Midwest. And so I feel, and I grew up in the West, I'm from Montana, yet I've been a Midwestern transplant now for over a decade. And I very much associate with being a Midwesterner because the stories that are told by people from this region have just as much vibrancy, culture, and intentionality as those from New York City or from Los Angeles. And so Midwestern voices need a space where they can be elevated. And if the independent book industry can be part of that space, that's wonderful. We need to elevate more voices, not exclude more voices.
Okay, so we've gotten to the point here, Kristen, where you can elevate a voice. Can you give us an example of a memorable book published through your press?
Well, the first one that comes to mind is the Dane County Farmers Market Cookbook, commemorating the 50th anniversary of the Dane County Farmers Market. So that's the kind of the epitome of what kind of elevation we're talking about with Midwestern voices. Therese Allen authored the book, worked closely with the Farmers Market board, and that has been one of our best-selling books. We're on our second run. We do traditional print runs and we do print on demand, and it's been we're on our second run of 5,000 books within. We released it in July of 2023. So it's the opportunity to, on a global scale, share what Dane County and Wisconsin has to offer in that food scape, so to speak.
That must make you feel really good, because for each manuscript, you really have to think through the future and what could happen if it is published, like the financials and the numbers, and you have to run all of that alongside a compelling manuscript. What is that like for you?
Well, I find it to be extraordinarily fun because a lot of our job is to see the potential, think long-term, see the potential, just not now, but what is this going to do for our author, their platform, their life now, but in the future? Is this the first book in the series? Is this their trial at really putting out their shingle as an author? Who are they going to touch? For how long are they going to touch people? How are these books and words going to affect? How many people are going to cook these recipes?
Ross, can you give us an example of a memorable book published through Cornerstone?
This is like trying to pick your favorite child. Honestly, we work with so many books now. When I took over the position in 2016, we were publishing one book a year. So I would have a very easy answer there, because one book a year only makes for so many total books over time. But we've since expanded to, 20, 30, 40 books a year over the last several years. So with all of our genres and all of our authors from various states, I'm honestly proud of all of them. But for a few, the Wisconsin Poet Laureate, Margaret Rozga, we've published two of her books, her collected poems, Holding Myself Together, here a couple of years ago, and then her most recent collection, Restoring Prairie. So proud to be associated with not only Margaret as a poet, who's just a wonderful Wisconsin poet, but also the Wisconsin Poet Laureate Commission. That's been a really wonderful relationship. And then in terms of stories, I do have a soft spot for my Wisconsin writers, my Wisconsin short story writers. Kim Suhr is putting out her second collection with us, Close Call, here in a month. And her short story collection, Nothing to Lose, was one of our best sellers when it came out a few years ago. So, but I could sit and tell you so many stories of every individual author, every individual book that we've worked on since 2016. So it's been a wonderful ride thus far.
May I ask how you have been able to scale up in such a way?
Sure. So one, we've expanded the amount of classes that we offer for publishing students. So instead of having one class per year, we have one every semester. They're all filled with 20 to 23 students. So that right there expands your staff considerably. I've also just created more of a space where we can see authors in different networks. And so instead of trying to do all of our work and all of our sales right here in Stevens Point, Wisconsin, we're getting authors from Ohio, from California, from New York, from Indiana, because each network for each author yields significant benefits, whether it's sales or prestige or reviews. And so just slowly but surely now into a larger operation, we have the staff for it. We have the bandwidth for it, the support from our university, which has been considerable. And now, of course, the different networks of writers that we work with.
I do want to ask about AI before we go here. The AI publishing website says it has a place for authors to help build books to boost sales, full manuscripts, proofreading, personalizing writing, brainstorming book ideas. Kristen, you first, how do you think about AI incorporating into the publishing world?
I was very wary. But I have recently been using AI. So I'm a graphic designer by trade. It's my I've been doing it for over 30 years, and I have seen the opportunity with AI for cover designs. So a whole new world has opened up to me as a designer of some fantastic book covers. So I can see the advantage of using it in that way. I am a little wary still. I don't know how. I understand the capabilities of AI peripherally, but I don't know how it's going to translate to the written word. I honestly don't have a good answer for that because I'm skeptical. And I think it's going to get harder and harder to discern AI versus not AI. And even I've noticed, even when we use Ingram for distribution, I've even noticed now when I'm uploading a book file, that's one of most of my platforms now have that question: was AI used in any form of creation of this book? So I think that is telling that we're just kind of on the beginning of who knows what's coming, but we're already starting to see adaptations to weed out whether or not it was created in AI.
Ross, your thoughts?
I've always told students that the greatest invention in human history was the book. The very idea that we can catalog human striving and human emotion and story and narrative through this physical object that is labored over not only by a writer who writes, but by compositors, typesetters, book designers, marketers, booksellers. Writing is the essential act of the human. And I think that though AI is becoming part of our regular lives, and there's ways in which, of course, you should utilize technology to your benefit. John Berryman, the poet, he said that we flash and yearn as humans. Humans flash and yearn. And I would rather see the flashing and yearning of a writer struggling to write and then creating something out of their flashing and yearning than just seeing something that's been spit out by a machine that has no heart and has no brain. So we are very much about telling human stories by humans for humans.
Ross and Kristen, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Kristen Mitchell is owner and founder of Little Creek Press in Mineral Point, and Ross Tangadal is an associate professor of English and director of the Cornerstone Press at UW-Stevens Point.
Still ahead on Wisconsin Today, meet Powwow Singers, taking this rich cultural and sacred tradition in new directions on the album Unbound.
We're Ojibwe, and we're going to try to use as much of our language as possible to contribute to the greater movement and normalizing our language.
It's the band Bijiki on WPR News.